sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. On Thursday, March 3rd, we'll be showing the movie Deceptions in the Wild Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford at 7 p.m. The showing of the movie Deceptions was previously scheduled in January but got snowed out and was postponed to Thursday, March 3rd. The interview you're about to hear with filmmaker Chris Pratt was previously aired in early January. I thought it would be appropriate to air it again prior to the upcoming showing of the movie, which is Thursday, March 3rd. So here's that interview with the filmmaker Chris Pratt. Today I'll be interviewing Chris Pratt, the producer of the film Deceptions, and that will be followed by some audio clips on the New World Order. Chris Pratt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're the producer of the movie Deceptions. What motivated you to produce the movie?
It really started, I was preparing for a brain injury presentation, and when doing so, the importance of awareness, choice, and consequence on brain function, a function called neuroplasticity, became very important. And while I was doing that, a friend of mine gave me a Naomi Wolf book, Death of America. And it became obvious to me how important awareness, choice, and consequence was in the post-9/11 world, and that a lot of people did not realize that doing nothing was a choice, and the consequence of that choice was the world we currently live in. So those two overlapping links got me starting to investigate this whole 9/11 post-world.
And why did you decide to focus on 9/11 in the first part of your movie? It's essentially seven chapters, but you started out with 9/11.
Yeah, I started out with 9/11 because it's really my own personal story of discovery, and it really begins with 9/11. 9/11 is like the first chapter because that's where it all began.
So the whole dilemma we're in right now started with 9/11 is what your take is on it?
Yeah, my take is really that 9/11 is the first domino in a series of cascading dominoes that goes from 9/11 to when it crashes into Bush and crashes into Obama and crashes into the power elite and crashes into media control and finally New World Order.
All right, so we'll talk about that a bit later in the show. But you dedicate a chapter each to Bush and Obama in the film. And what do you want the viewers to come away with each of those? First, let's talk about Bush and then we can go on to Obama.
Well, I'm going to jump back a bit because the purpose of talking about them both is to kind of underscore that yes, there are differences between Democrats and Republicans, but to the ultra-elite, to the real rich people, it's really a game. And, you know, as long as we continue to squabble thinking Republicans and Democrats will fundamentally change the picture on the high end, they win and we lose. So I started with Bush and Cheney because I wanted the viewer to see that following 9/11, those two really began a reign of terror that I feel is unbelievable. Thousands are dead, thousands are wounded, millions of civilians have been displaced. Wars are presented to us as essential to protect our freedoms, while any thinking person can readily see it's total bullshit. It's about money and oil, and no honest academic would ever say otherwise. Greenspan and Horowitz, the principal engineer of this invasion, have already said so. Record oil profits were registered during this period. At the same time, records are set for the price of gas, the number of uninsured, and the number of poor. You know, I can go on and on. Oil fields and pipelines are privatized and protected. Central banks are open. Torture, rendition, wiretapping, email, spying, rendition, due process, habeas corpus, warrantless searches. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I could go on for more. And then we go to Obama, and we were all hopeful. I voted for the guy that everything was going to change, and I think he's the biggest deception of them all. You know, his administration is filled with exactly the people he pledged to protect us from, Wall Street, fat cats, insiders, and he's got 46 former lobbyists on his staff. Trillions are given to the banks, thousands of troops, more troops are sent to Afghanistan, None of our civil liberties have been restored. Nuclear industry is bolstered with government loans. Offshore drilling is sanctioned. Pledges of transparency are followed by the hiring of more lobbyists. No investigation into the war crimes of Bush and Cheney. No investigation of the events of 9/11. Police brutality is legendary, you know, as evident by the G20 summit in Toronto. It's just unreal. It's only been 2 years.
I agree with you about him being a big deception, because I see people on the left still thinking that he's going to save us, and I don't understand it, but that's how they feel.
Well, in the film, I spend a lot of time on that, because I was so aghast that the difference between candidate Obama and President Obama is like black and white.
So tell us a little bit about the section on the film where you go into the elite, the fraud, and the bribery.
The more I started looking at this whole thing, then it kind of dawned on me after I did the Obama investigation that really both Bush and Obama and any president are really players. They're key players. They're big players. You know, they're the power role of a chessboard. But I really think there's forces beyond them that are really pulling the strings. And the two families, I mean, I could make a case for lots of different people, but nobody denies the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers are probably the kingpins of the elite, or they're way up there. The Rothschilds have wealth registered in the trillions. Trillions. I mean, if you think of, if you only have $365 million, that's $1 million a day. That's only $365 million. To spend, and then you go to billions, and then you go to trillions. I mean, the amount of money is unimaginable. And so the power that they can wield is unimaginable. So I really think the bottom line to all this is money. It's not freedom. The Rockefellers, if you just wanted to focus on that, they own 92% of all the oil production in 1911. In fact, they were broken up into 34 separate companies as they were considered to be a monopoly. But Daddy Rockefeller maintained 25% interest in every one of those 34 companies, which became Exxon and Mobil and Chevron and Conoco, partial ownership in BP. And Rockefeller's owned 25% of every one of those multi-billion dollar companies. And that's just oil. Then he merged with Chase Bank and J.P. Morgan to become the biggest bank in the world. So, I mean, you know, the guy's wealth is unimaginable. And you know, we, I think, are kind of deceived into thinking that the charitable work he does even is millions, which seems like a lot to us, but it's we can change for him. So nobody dares to do anything because the amount of money he's given away controls anybody saying anything harmful against him. So it's really just corruption beyond anything I ever thought I'd experience. And it's perpetuated by this greed.
And so it's greed that they want. What is their ultimate agenda? I mean, why orchestrate 9/11 if indeed they did that? Or why do the bank, you know, the heist of all our money out of our treasury? What's going on?
I mean, nobody really knows, and I don't profess to know. I mean, we just look at the dots, and everybody tries to connect them in their own way. The more I looked at it, it seems obvious to me that there was a power structure beyond our elected officials, and it was controlled by money. You know, the Rockefeller family or, you know, all of our politicians participate in legal bribery. Their campaigns are funded by corporations for the most part. And now with the Supreme Court saying that corporations can give what they want, you tell me how somebody that can put millions into an elected official's pocket versus you and I that can just vote are going to be equal. And there's no way. I mean, the whole process is controlled by money. And the theory behind New World Order is it's the same thing as 1984, where you're going to have two races of people. You're going to have an upper elite that controls everything, and you're just going to have a mass of consumptive workers that don't dare to question anything or are too stupid to question anything. And that's going to be the New World Order, which is basically debt slaves and, you know, the rich. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately the New World Order scheme of projections.
So can you tell us a little bit about, you focus in the movie a little bit on the corporate media. Could you elaborate on that for the listeners?
One of the things that I think is even worse than some of these people, I'm really going to think against media because they perpetuate the lies. I don't think anybody can deny that evil exists and that there's evil people in the world and they don't really give 2 cents about people and they have limited morality, etc. But the way this is perpetuated is through media. And that's where I get really upset, because they're supposed to be the check and balance to greed and corruption, and they're owned by the very same people. When media consolidation took place, you went from 55 or 60 multimedia companies to 5 or 6. They own everything. And they're huge multi-billion dollar companies. And they've pretty much set the agenda of what's on the news. It's so bad that even commercials are synchronized between mainstream media news channels. You can't switch from NBC to ABC because the commercials all happen at exactly the same time. So when the commercials are even synchronized, you can imagine the news sound bites are the same. And the way they kind of get away with it is not necessarily what they say. It's what they intentionally don't ever look at. They don't ever ask the politicians the tough questions that they can't answer. They never ask about how the Fed was formed and who are the owners of the private Fed Reserve banks, and how come we know nothing about them, and how come the money trails always lead back to the same key families and the same key corporations. I mean, there's no investigation into any of that stuff. So people have this illusion that they're getting the news. And sometimes when it's safe, they are. But a lot of times when there are issues that really affect our rights to vote and who we're voting for and why we're voting for them and what they stand for, and the corruption that's taking place corporate-wide and in the military establishment, none of that is covered. So it's frustrating.
Now, you say that we have little time. In your booklet that comes along with the movie Deceptions, you say that in 3 or 4 more election cycles, the voices of the little people will be permanently silenced, that we don't have a lot of time to challenge the New World Order. And I wonder if you could elaborate on that.
Well, some of what I see is that the lies are more bold. The police force and you know, Homeland Security has really become almost Gestapo-like. I mean, if you voice any objection to what's going on in a peaceful way or anyways, writers and bloggers, and I really think there's going to be a concerted effort to shut down any vehicle of free speech. And right now, my personal feeling is the Internet is the last bastion of free speech. I mean, a little guy like me can have the same face on the Internet as an IBM. So it really allows little people to have the same voice of multi-billion dollar companies. So it levels the playing field. And the elite absolutely do not want a level playing field. And they're doing their absolute best to close it down. And unfortunately, this Republican-Democrat thing is this fight between big business is Republican and big government is Democrat. And it's really an illusion. You know, as long as that's where we fight, they'll keep banging through whatever they need to bang through. You know, we've got financial reform that has no teeth. Derivatives are not managed, so the elite can still do what they want. In spite of, what, 70-something people that publicly supported a public option, it was eliminated by Obama. The top CEOs of insurance companies make $11.9 million apiece. So there's so much money, and it's so much graft and so much corruption. And the more you look, it's worse and worse and more corrupt and more corrupt and more criminal. And so I just think that it's becoming obvious enough, and you've got G20, so you've got riots happening everywhere. The police brutality is getting stronger, and they're almost becoming like a private security force to the rich, not a police that protects the public. I really think everything's kind of in place to have another major event, another pandemic or another whatever, and put to bed the few remaining pieces that we have. There's some people that say WikiLeaks is an excuse to shut down the net.
Yes, I have read some of that, and I'm keeping an open mind about that could possibly be it.
That, because on the one hand, there's some legitimate stories that have been written based on the leaks, but on the other hand, there's already legislation in place to call this a security breach and shut down the net. It's so bizarre to me that here is our government listening to every phone call we make, watching every email that we send, and they've got the guts to get upset when somebody else does the same thing they're doing.
Right. Right. Well, plus 9/11, the corporate media won't cover it barely. It can't get out there. So if they didn't want WikiLeaks to get out there, they could get the corporate media to not cover it.
Right. That's exactly what a lot of people are saying, is that they're conveniently leaking what's kind of safe to leak as an excuse to kind of get at the net, which is the last place left where little people can readily get information about what's going on.
I think people should really keep an open mind about that.
Yeah.
That may be the plan there.
I mean, in general, I think anytime you hear the word security, you know, hold on.
Exactly, right.
Your freedoms are going to be thrown out the door.
Yes, it's like on the one hand, supposedly they're fighting to keep us free from terrorists, and then on the other hand, we're losing all our freedoms from our own government.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like a sleight of hand. So let me ask you, do you have any thoughts on what the American people can do about this?
You know, one of the things that I thought, because a long time ago I sustained a fairly significant brain injury myself, and part of my recovery had to do with neural stimulation, exercise diet, etc. In other words, I really engaged my mind. And I said, well, how can I bridge these two disparate worlds between the brain-injured world and the post-9/11 world? And it really became obvious to me after a while that in the brain-injured world, it's all about thinking. All about thinking to actually change your brain's chemistry, to get you alive, to get you to think, to maximize whatever neural cells you have left. And in the post-9/11 world, just the opposite. They don't want you to think. In fact, the more brain dead you are, and the less you challenge anything, the more that they like it. I don't know if you've heard of Christopher Hedges, but he actually, in his book, The Empire of the Illusion, he talked about a study that Princeton had done where they had taken the debate transcripts of Kennedy and Nixon, and then they took the debate transcripts of Bush and Gore, and the reading level that was required dropped from 10th grade to between 6th and 7th. So there's no question that we're being intentionally dumbed down. And it's reality TV and entertainment. That's it. Even news is part of the entertainment divisions of these media conglomerates. So we're really kind of in our individual sovereignty. The dollar is being discounted. They're even talking about an Amero versus the dollar because they're destroying the dollar and the currency.
And the Amero currency would be Canadian, Mexican, and American union of
exactly.
One currency.
Yeah, okay. So a lot of the things are in place to kind of wrap it up. And when you see G20 summits, which are kind of the world's bankers and the world, including the IMF and the World Bank, when they get together and in one weekend have $1 billion spent on security for them at the Toronto G20 summit, and then they talk about austerity, saying that Wall Street and the bankers and everybody else kind of blew it. We're in these horrible debts, and the people are going to have to bail them out. And they're preparing for riots. There's been riots all over Europe. There's been riots in Greece. There's been riots in Spain. There have been riots in England. It's kind of coming. And, you know, they're already talking about austerity here. And the bad thing is that mainstream media is so effective that the right has been quite well organized, and they think that, you know, we should privatize things more. I mean, there is no difference between big government and big business. They're one and the same. When are people going to realize that? Big business owns big government. Money owns everything.
Right. And I see them using the word socialist now like they've done with the word liberal and like they've done with the word conspiracy, where they make it so that it becomes a horrible word that you just, you know, the connotations of it just make you run in the other direction.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, a lot of the people that I consider experts in the area are talking about almost taking on a survivalist mentality. The dollar's going to collapse. You're not going to be able to count on government for food. It's really like the survival mentality. Keep your cash in gold and silver. Keep a supply of food on hand. Don't be dependent upon utilities and water. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's very frightening.
What they're scaring, what they're talking about is really scary stuff.
So what can we do about it? Do you have any thoughts on that?
What I was talking about, the thread between the brain-injured world and the post-11 world, and talk about what we can do about it, it's very, very simple. Just think. If we're analytical thinkers, we'll readily see through the bolt. You know, if you're an analytical thinker, you can't just add up all the questions that remain unanswered on 9/11 and not say we should know. I mean, the world changed based on the events that happened on that day. Everything happened. We should know what happened that day, and we don't. And, you know, all we have to do is to fight this force of dumbing us down and read and turn off the TV and go to the Internet and become thinkers. Analyze what's being said. Don't trust what you're hearing on the news. Don't trust what your government's telling you. Find out from yourself with 3 or 4 different sources. Be analytical thinkers. Be citizen journalists. Don't take what you hear as the gospel. Get involved. It's really quite simple. It's just thinking. Just like thinking changed my perspective. I mean, I was in a wheelchair. I couldn't balance one check in the checkbook. Thinking kind of got me out of that hole. Not thinking is getting us back in one.
Now, is there anything else that we haven't mentioned that you would like to talk about or share with the listeners?
You know, the main message is to just think. And if you think, a lot of the stuff that you're told, a lot of the stuff that you don't see, a lot of the stuff that seems obvious, whether it's thinking as applied to who you're voting for. Or I really think in general you need to think globally and act locally. I know that's, you know, a very overused term, but I think there's no reason that you can't hold your select board accountable for national issues. You're a citizen of your local town. You breathe air. You eat food. You drink water. There's no reason those guys can't be held accountable for it. It doesn't matter what kind of big business and who holds your senator's purse strings. Those guys are local. They have to be voted on in local elections, and a much higher chance that they're not going to be corrupt if you apply national issues to local officials.
Now, we're going to be showing your movie Deceptions at the University of Hartford on January 26th at 7 p.m. in the Wild Auditorium, and you'll be present to have a post-film discussion.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And why should people come out and see your film?
I think the main thing that makes my film different is a couple of things. One is that I don't just take one subject. It's really kind of my whole story, my journey of discovery from 9/11 to the New World Order. So a lot of the documentaries that are out there spend 2 hours talking about 9/11 or spend 2 hours talking about the New World Order. I tried to make it compelling enough so that the people that already know might not know something that I discuss and would find the sequencing compelling, as well as it's general enough so that a group of non-choir members, the general public, for example, would also find it interesting. So those are the two worlds that I'm trying to hit with it. It is fast-paced. In 80 minutes, I cover lots of ground. But it is compelling, and it's worth seeing. And everybody who's seen it so far, you know, I've had about, I don't know, a couple of months, over 7,000 hits to my website, and you know, probably hundreds of the people in the screenings, as well probably a couple hundred DVDs. So a lot of people have seen it. Nobody says it stinks. Everybody thinks it's worth seeing, both from the GP world and the people that really know what's going on out there.
Now, will you have copies of it with you for sale, or do you give them away, or I don't know, however you do that at our film showing?
We can work that out. Basically, what I do is give them away so we can make copies of it. But the prerequisite is to share them with others. I mean, I really think it's important that the world knows what's going on. And so there's no fee. I really, the only thing I have to sell is the message, and it's all free.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for being on the show today, Chris Pratt. And we will see you on Thursday, March 3rd, for the showing of your movie Deceptions.
Very good. Thank you very much.
So are there shadow masters out there with a plan for one world government, for the new world order? You can listen to these next two clips and decide for yourself. Here's an audio clip of George Bush Sr. talking about the New World Order.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order. An order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
And now you'll hear an audio clip of Aaron Russo talking about the plans the power elite have for the future and for the new world order. Aaron Russo was a movie producer, best known for the movies Trading Places, Wise Guys, and The Rose. He also produced several documentaries, one of which was called America, Freedom to Fascism. He ran for governor of Nevada in 1998, and he ran for president in 2004. And now here's the clip of Aaron Russo talking about his friendship with Nicholas Rockefeller.
This is Aaron Russo, a filmmaker and former politician. To his left is Nicholas Rockefeller of the infamous Rockefeller Banking and Business Dynasty. After maintaining a close friendship with Nicholas Rockefeller, Aaron eventually ended the relationship, appalled by what he had learned about the Rockefellers and their ambitions.
I got a call one day from an attorney woman I knew, and she said, would you like to meet one of the Rockefellers? I said, sure, I'd love to. And we became friends, and he began to divulge a lot of things to me. So he said to me one night, he said that there's going to be an event there, and out of that event, you're going to see we're going to go into Afghanistan so we can run pipelines from the Caspian Sea. We're going to go into Iraq to take the oil and establish a base in the Middle East. And we're going to go into Venezuela and try and get rid of Chavez. And the first two they've accomplished. Chavez they didn't accomplish. And I said, you're going to see guys going into caves looking for looking for people that they're never going to find. You know, he was laughing about the fact that you have this war on terror. There's no real enemy. He's talking about how by having this war on terror, you can never win it because it's an eternal war. And so you can always keep taking people's liberties away. And I said, how are you going to convince people that this war is real? He said, but the media. The media can convince everybody it's real. I mean, you know, it's just that you keep talking about things. You keep saying it over and over and over again. And eventually people believe it. You know, you created the Federal Reserve in 1913 through lies. You create 9/11, which is another lie. Through 9/11, you're fighting a war on terror. And now all of a sudden you go into Iraq, which was another lie. And now they're going to do Iran. You know, and it's all one thing leading to another, leading to another, leading to another. Now, I would say, to why? What are you doing this for? What's the point of this thing? You have all the money in the world you ever want. You have all the power. I said, you know, you're hurting people. It's not a good thing. And he would say, what do you care about the people for? Take care of yourself and you take care of your family. And then I said to him, what are the ultimate goals here? He said, the ultimate goal is to get everybody in this world chipped with the RFID chip. And have all money be on those chips and everything on those chips. And if anybody wants to protest what we do or violate what we want, we just turn off that chip.
Aaron Russo died of cancer in 2007. But before he died, he told about what he had learned through his friendship with Nicholas Rockefeller. If you go to YouTube.com and search for Aaron Russo, you'll find lots of videos and interviews of him talking about all of this. It's quite interesting. So we hope you'll join us for the showing of the movie Deceptions on Thursday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Wild Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. In addition to the March 3rd movie night, I'm also going to tell you about a few other events. First, on Sunday, March 20th, the folks out in the Litchfield County area are planning an anti-war demonstration on the Litchfield Green, starting at 12 noon. And again, that's Sunday, March 20th. And they'd like to make it a big anti-war statement, and they're asking people to join them. So there you have it, Sunday, March 20th at 12 noon on the Litchfield Green. And then on Saturday, March 26th, the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group, in collaboration with the Building What campaign, is hosting a day-long conference called Investigate Building 7. The program begins at 9:30 a.m. and ends at 9:30 p.m., and it will include the following speakers: Architect Richard Gage, the attorney for the Martin Luther King family, William Pepper, scientist Kevin Ryan, Canadian professor Graham McQueen, journalists Mark Crispin Miller, Leslie Griffith, and Craig Unger, and victims' family members Bob McElvain, who lost his son in the towers, and Manny Badillo, who lost his uncle in the towers. So please come and join us on Saturday, March 26th. The tickets are $20 for the full day, and you can get them at the box office at 800-274-8587. That's 800-274-8587. And this great event will be in the Millard Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford, again on Saturday, March 26th. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.